After a long month's absence, today's joke is that I played golf and I quite enjoyed it. what are your thoughts on that, Mr. Barreto?
I don't really know what to say on a multiple... Meadows looks disappointed, confused, but we'll deal with that shortly. I don't know what to make of it, Nate, because I've never seen you so happy.
I was quite good at the hitting bit. I was quite
never.
Good at it. Never. I think I've been happy before on numerous occasions.
I've also was impressed at how smoothly you took to it.
Mm.
Like, it was like you'd been playing golf all your life.
It was a bit like that. I think I've listened to so much talk about it that I feel like I'm a natural now. So
you had some expert tuition.
I did.
From Chris Medland.
Mr. Medland showed me a grip that was good. He taught me how to stand. And that was before we got to Topgolf. And here is very helpful as well. But that was helpful.
Well, two questions.
Yeah.
One, did you enjoy yourself?
I did.
Okay. Yes.
Wow, that's huge.
Two. Yeah, it's big news, isn't it?
Two, what's going on with Lawrence's sunglasses?
I'm not quite sure. I can see myself in them, so
well,
good glasses.
Well, on the right-hand side of his head, your left.
Yeah.
Just isn't right. Lawrence, turn your head for him, would you? No. No.
Other way.
Right-hand side.
Oh, yeah. They're kind of a bit short of the ear, I think. It looks a bit funny.
So, funny story this. Turns out my head's too big for sunglasses. And I've never really realised this.
I'd noticed, mate.
Thanks.
That's happened recently.
Yeah.
Wow.
Channel 4 years.
Boom.
No. Guys, come on. So, it turns out that no standard sunglass fits my head. So, the curved bit at the end of the... sunglass arm.
Yeah, it's correct now.
Just doesn't make it past the ear.
That is truly what is happening here.
Tremendous
to paint
chat.
You a picture. To paint you a full picture, we are sat on a garden bench in the sun outside Topgolf in Addleston, Surrey.
Name drop.
Southwest England, Great Britain.
Northern Hemisphere, planet Earth.
Yeah. And we've just had three games of Topgolf. We've had some lunch, we've had a few drinks. During which Barreto's big head also demanded a certain type of gin.
That was remarkable, wasn't it?
He has reasoning that I'm sure he'll give him later, but at this stage of proceedings, we need to know, if there's going to be one based on that, what the score was for the joke.
Well, I was going to say, I do actually have a joke, but I just wanted to start it a bit differently. So, I'll say the joke. What was the rating to the first joke? Because that wasn't really a joke.
Well, because you loved golf so much, having... slated it so often on this very podcast, I was going to give you a high score, in and around the 6 or 7 mark.
Oh, I thought you were going to slam him for it because he's, slagged off golf for all his life and then he tries it.
This is great, finally. Maybe. Even if, we've just made you like golf without you realising it.
I like top golf. I don't know about golf.
Well, hang on, look, baby steps late. Baby
I'm
steps.
Surprised the joke there, you should have said you're giving me a birdie or a bogey. That would have been funny, you see. But my joke, we can crack
that's why
it.
You do the checks, Nate.
Yeah. So my joke, you ready for it? Me. So it's the first time we've done it with this much of a build-up. I went to the pharmacy the other day and asked the assistant, what's the best thing for killing germs? Ammonia cleaner, she said. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you worked here.
I always love a joke where you have a little giggle before you almost finish that final line.
Yeah.
I liked it. Given we've rambled on for a little bit, I'll get straight to the point. 8.7.
Love it.
I liked it. Strong.
After
a few weeks away, you've hit the ground running.
Yeah, I'm on board with that score.
Sweet.
Oh, I suppose I should introduce the show. Welcome back, everyone, to the Pad Hoc with Chris, with Nate, and with me. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Chris's work on racing.com, and my work on F1.com, and I'm aware that I've just done the end.
I was just going to say, it's not the end of the show.
But also, not just that, who's me?
Yeah, who's me? Who are you?
First time listener, very sorry, because you don't know who me is, even if it's written everywhere.
Is it Ben me?
No, I haven't got that much footballing talent, no. I'm Lawrence, sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry, you're right. For new listeners, if you're out there, I'm Lawrence.
It's because Lawrence now only identifies as Sabrina's husband. He got married since the last episode.
That's
so
true.
He's walking around everywhere being like, my wife, and I'm a husband now.
I really have used the term wife a lot, and it's really nice.
Sure, you've got a wedding ring on.
I have got a wedding ring.
I thought you were hiding it from me for a second.
No, it's there.
So let's start there, because I think we ended. It's been a month since we did this show, and last time we were talking about your wedding. So it was an absolutely beautiful day. Tell us about it from your perspective.
Is this where you needed a month to recover, Nate?
Honestly, I think I needed about that time. I was quite
inebriated.
Yeah, I would say inebriated is a fair word. And the next day I was in a bit of a state as well.
Oh, sorry.
So, no, don't apologise.
But I think a good time...
It was a celebration of you, so I don't mind.
No, it wasn't
and
his me.
Wife. And Sabrina. And Sabrina.
It was just one massive party where feels like you guys had a good time. I think everyone who came had a good time. We had a great time.
That's the main thing.
It was. We just wanted to have a really nice day. It was at Farnham Castle. I can say that now.
Nobody worked this out from the last episode when I gave you the
thought about that.
When you had to James Bond us. No one nailed it. We're very, very sad. But apologies to the police who had to remove people from Hever Castle.
Yeah, there were Padhawk fans lining the streets of Hever Castle.
Yeah.
Colchester Castle, they were inundated with them.
If anyone's seen the royal wedding on TV, it was just like that, but in the wrong location.
Yeah, but bigger.
Yeah.
More of a security risk. Joe Biden flew in, especially, couldn't find the location. That wasn't down to him not knowing where it was, just down to him not really knowing anything.
Poor sorry, Joe Biden, I didn't actually get a hammer in on this.
He's alright, he's fine, he's leader of the free world, isn't he? He can put up with a joke or two. Anyway.
I suppose he has to, right?
Yeah.
Wait, you do jokes?
I think, yeah. Right, that's my last one of the show, so... But anyway, other than Joe Biden not making it,
I did have the best day. It was the best day ever, really.
Good.
I was only really nervous on the point in which Sabrina walked up the aisle.
Really?
Up until that point, I was nervous. But then when I saw her...
Because you thought she might turn around and be like, this is a dreadful mistake.
Yeah, panic.
No, Sabrina turned up early.
Yeah, that was stunning.
Well, did she? We were told she was going to, and we were all made to sit down.
Yeah.
And then I feel like she didn't.
No, because then the priest wasn't ready. So the priest wanted to start on time.
Right.
So he decided that he wasn't going to...
He was a character, for listeners who weren't there, which is pretty much everyone. He was a character.
Yeah, he was.
He was rogue.
But he had a very thick Irish accent, didn't he?
He did. So,
I couldn't really understand much of what he said.
Apologies if you could understand.
It reminded me of Mass at school when I used to go to a Catholic school. And you'd be like, oh, we're making good progress. We're getting through quite well. And then the priest would stand up and be like, now for the next hour, I'm going to talk to you about John the Baptist. And you're like, oh, God.
So that, for clarity, did not happen.
No, it wasn't that bad. But no. I just got vibes of it, you know, because he stood up and spoke for a little bit.
He had a good chit chat. He's known me for
minutes.
Quite a long time. And the homily, he started off by saying to us in the head of the day, I'm going to keep it really short. He did not keep it short.
No, he didn't.
Was that when he got... he'd been talking for a while and he went, and if anyone's trying to understand where this old man is going, he's trying to find a place to land. Because that was the best line.
Yeah, that was good.
Where that was a bit where you're like, where's this headed? And it was the fact that he then was like, I don't know where it's headed. So
I think he's used that line a few times before.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
He's just a funny guy. So we wanted someone a bit more relaxed, and obviously I've known him for a fair few years.
Yeah,
so
that
was good. So yeah, great ceremony, great party afterwards. DJ Ryan. Shout out to him.
Great. The guy with the drums.
With the percussion drums.
Yeah, that was good.
So, it was a great day all round, guys.
We enjoyed ourselves heavily. So, listeners will be thankful to know that despite his newfound status as a husband, Lawrence has still been able to find the time to join us on the show.
I'll always find the time for you guys. You know that.
Yeah, he's a husband first and a Padhawker second.
I think that's the right way.
Yeah, yeah. I think
that's
Sabrina
the right way
will
to
thank
be,
you
right?
for that.
Yeah,
not the
yeah.
other way around.
Yeah.
Other way around, you wouldn't have been a husband for very long if it was the other way around.
I thought it was the Padhawk that really attracted her to him.
She mentioned it once. Wait a minute. Who's that guy? Rating those jokes, those terrible jokes, being very kind to his friend about them. That's what did it.
Maybe. But now that my wedding's done and dusted, we obviously have to throw forward to the next Padhawk wedding.
Yeah, which is...
So Nate's got
away.
A date tonight, and we'll see how quickly you can turn that around.
Don't think I can beat you, mate, but I'll try. What are you guys doing that Friday in Hereford? Try it out.
Yeah, that might be free. 4 weeks for me.
Yeah,
so yeah, yours
time
is...
Fetters.
Well, for excuses for the lack of Padhawking, I'm also moving house in 5 days. Certain mortgage issues permitting. So, there's been a lot going on, and the season ended, and then everyone else went on holiday. And it was like, no, we've got a lot of very tiring work to do. Not only like paid work, but life work. And I guess the same for both of you guys. Neither of you have gone away either.
But I do just love the fact that you're just doing it all in one go, Medders. Like, doing a wedding's not enough. Move house at the same time.
Ticking all those boxes off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you're achieving life goals.
Yeah.
And I love it.
So my sister won this battle because she also started a new job at the same time. Although Jess started a new job in January, so technically in the same year. But I think there's been a bit of breathing space. But that's what led to us being able to then be like, okay, that's the house we're going to get, because we knew where we could live, because job stuff was a bit more secure. And then the wedding was already planned. So, and you're not going to just say no to the house you want to move into because you might be getting married soon after.
Also, but it wouldn't be able to understand you.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, it would just be the letterbox had just drooped. Wow.
I'd have given
that
you
might
seven.
Be a new low on this that podcast.
Might be, that seven. I would have given it a seven. I liked it.
Wow. Well, this says a lot of things about the rating system. Yeah. But yeah.
So yeah, that's all to come. Which there's excitement around this though, because I will be moving closer to. I was about to call you my two co-hosts. As if I'm running this ship, but I'm not.
Your fellow hosts.
I'm not, yeah.
Yeah, that's more, like, just you
well,
guys.
Well, Lawrence is kind of the host.
Exactly, that's why
I
I'm like,
feel
yeah,
like we just did it together.
No, you're the host. You intro and outro.
We
do
yes,
what we
that's
want.
That's true.
You're meant to keep on the straight and narrow. So
I know, I
a
struggle.
Bit like this,
I
like,
always struggle. Yeah. See, look, you're just continuing, you're just going on.
So, okay, Paddock is F1 related, isn't it, this one? So
I had heard that. I had to listen back to a few to remind myself.
So let's rewind to the race that only Nate was at, I believe, in Budapest.
Budapest.
Yes, that's true.
The Daniel Ricciardo Grand Prix.
Yeah, you missed us, right?
I did, actually. I did miss you both. It was a funny one because usually that race for us is the last race of the term, you know, the first half of the year.
So, and the school feeling.
And it did have that, but then we had to go to Spa after, which was, you know, slightly, no, I wouldn't say underwhelming, but it was underwhelming. I don't want to insult Spa. But no, Budapest was funny because often these Fridays at this stage of the season, sorry, the Thursdays, this stage of the season, the media days, not really a lot to talk about, is there?
No.
Yeah, we kind of hit that point where it's like, well, we know Max is going to win. You know, Lewis is going to sign his contract at some point. Like, you're scrambling around trying to find a story. We had a ready-made story for us in Danny Ric. And his media session, I don't think... the pictures of it didn't do it justice. You guys saw the pictures of session in the corner of the Red Bull. It was massive. I counted at the busiest bit. It was 15 people deep, which is pretty crazy. And there was a lot of people there. It was the first session of the day, so there's probably a lot of reasons why. There weren't any clashes. But it was just... It showed you how popular that story is. It was pretty fun. And, yeah, Ricciardo just seems to have kind of just come back. It's almost like he's not been away, which I thought was kind of cool. Mm. He's come back into it. It's weird seeing him in AlphaTauri gear. I don't know if you thought that. It looks like he's like put the wrong kit on or something. But yeah, that was pretty fun. I think without that as well, those two races would have been, there'd have really been nothing to talk about.
They'd been quite flat, I think.
They really would have been. So it's good he did well the first week. You know, the out qualified Yuki finished. Should have probably been in the points if he had not been hit at the start of Hungary. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was really great. And yeah, he's just fun to talk to still. He hasn't lost any of that, so that was fun. And then Budapest. What else happened in Budapest? I can't really remember.
I think you just went out a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, that's pretty much Budapest. Yeah. Half of the course, you go out, go to the ruin bars a little bit, have a bit of schnitzel. Sorry, schnitzel? Why did I say schnitzel?
Schnitzel.
Schnitzel.
Is that a breed of dog?
I think it is, yeah. That's Shih Tzu. But no, yeah, Hungary's one of my favourite races. Still is. Always has been. So yeah, good times. I feel like I'm missing something with Hungary, but I can't remember anything else that happened.
I mean, Lewis Hamilton took pole. That must have gone down quite well.
Oh, that was cool, because I'd run down to the mix zone at that point. And for anyone listening, that's where the TV pen is, but we also have the written pen there. And I couldn't quite see the TV that was on. You could see Lewis on a great lap. And you could just hear the noise of Lewis getting pole. I don't know whether it was because there was lots of Lewis fans there or whether it was just because someone other than Max had taken it. But it was really... I mean, it's louder than Silverstone when... You know, when Lewis does something there, it was really loud. It was a really cool moment. So I thought that was great.
But also, it was really close, though, wasn't it? 0.083
top three,
like,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Max and Lewis.
Like, if you clipped your fingers, it would be more time between the two, you know?
More than that.
Nice.
So I was at a wedding. That was my excuse.
That's right.
So I had a reason, as in, you know, I just give up time to go to weddings. Whereas Beretta was just, I don't know, gallivanting.
I was on the mini moon.
There you go. See, exactly. Just mini holiday.
There you go.
But the wedding was that. It was one of Jess's best friends, and there was three of them as a group who used to go to races together and like work together at Haymarket, which is the owner of Autosport, or was. So they used to work together on that, and big F1 fans. And the bride then for was like, kind of, yeah, keep us up to date with what's happening in qualifying. And also they wanted to know what's going on with the Ashes, and the Ashes were on at that point. So I genuinely was on my phone all the time, streaming it, and not getting in trouble. It was amazing.
Brilliant.
So it was after the ceremony. It was, you know, it was in the reception, so I wasn't...
That's ballsy at a wedding to get a phone out. And do
well,
that.
So I thought that. There was a point we had three phones lined up on our table, and we had the cricket on one, we had F1 qualifying on the next one, and we had the Open, because the golf was on as well.
I saw that on Instagram, and I was like, wow, that's ballsy. It was of medicine, Jeff.
And they just kept asking questions, wanting to know, and yeah, Lewis getting pole, they're very happy with it. I think, again, same thing, most people were just like, well, it's not Max.
I've got to point out here that Lawrence's wedding, the greatest Wimbledon final of all time, was taking place, and none of us watched it, out of respect.
I debate that. That greatest one was Federer and Nadal, 2009, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, in recent memory. And we didn't watch it. So I think your respect for Barreto is much higher, by the sounds of it, than your respect for these other two.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah. And we could have gone and watched it. You know, we saw the live one, like, this game sounds great. With WhatsApp chats coming in, so...
Oh, yeah, we did check it on BBC Sport a few times.
Maybe the memory of that had haunted you so much you're like, can't miss more sport.
Well, no, because this wedding was before... Oh, no, it was after yours. It was after yours. I knew it before. But yeah, that, I had to go back-to-back weddings. I mean, woe is me. But we've dodged that bullet, that with our wedding. It's taking place on the day of England's Rugby World Cup opener. And we have a lot of rugby fans coming to the wedding. Mm. So we're paying for a TV to be set up to show the game.
Oh, no way.
Because it's going to be when there's nothing really happening. Well, a big party's going on, but it's not like, no speeches at that point or anything like that. So it's like, people are going to want to watch. I'm going to want to watch. Jess wants to watch. Let's just make sure it's on.
Yeah.
Make sure people can see it. And then no one has to do the clandestine thing with your phone and all that. So learn from that, Barreto, next time.
This should be a tennis room.
Yeah, but that match went on for hours. It did. I couldn't have had it running.
So did
like
your wedding? Like, yeah, that's have a TV.
True. That is true. Yeah, you're right. It did go on for
your
hours.
Wedding was great fun. We had an awesome time, and it was lovely to see the great and good from Formula One elsewhere on Twitter and us lot at your wedding. But no, it was really fun. It genuinely was.
But we both made it back to Spa.
We did.
And to Belgium for one last hurrah before the summer break.
Soggy Spa.
And this is where I will admit, so we have multiple group chats, as I'm sure everyone does, every listener. If you're on WhatsApp, I bet you have, like, I don't know, 20, 30 group chats. And on one of them, it's a bunch of us that kind of share, I don't know, planning ideas or, like, travel, who's going here, when, where, in case you end up on the same flight, whatever it is. There's just, like, kind of people we work with in F1 that we've all ended up on a group chat. And most people on that group chat ahead of Spa were kind of going, can't be bothered with this. Like, I need a break. Yeah. And I get that you get into that feeling anyway, don't you, before the summer break? Like, it's been, what was it, 13 races, 12 races, but we had 4 in 5 weeks. And when you list those races and where some of the travel's been, like, people were tired out, burned out. I get that. But it stood out to me how much people seemed to want a break before Spa. And everyone seemed fine once they were there. And it feels horrible to say, because I'm sure fans are going, but it's an amazing circuit, you're so lucky to do what you do. And it's like, yeah, but that's why it actually stood out, that people were still like, I wish this wasn't happening. And I think that's when you're in a bit of a danger zone, is when F1's making you feel like, I wish this wasn't happening right now. Formula One representative doesn't need to comment. But the reason I bring it up is because Lawrence and I going now, I felt great. I was looking forward to it and excited. But I realised, we weren't in, I think we were in the minority at that point.
Yeah, because we'd missed Hungary, Henry. So I was excited to be back at a racetrack. And also, it was a really short stint at that race before I knew I'd had 3 weeks or whatever it is after that.
I think, to me, the biggest killer now at races is Fridays that don't have a sprint, don't have qualifying on them now. They're just like, once you've done that format once, you're kind of like, oh, you know. So the only good, so Spa obviously had the sprint part of it. So that actually made up for it a little bit, that you came to the Friday and like, well, at least we have like a 3-day competitive weekend. I quite like that. But sometimes you go to some races and the Friday you're like, it's pretty dull, you know, there's not really much going on there. So I would say that about Spa. I kind of felt like the sprint saved its enjoyment for me, and the sprint was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah,
it was a good one. Yeah.
It was fun. So
Oscar leading.
Yeah, it was
fun.
Well, it's just whenever you have half the grid pit on one lap and then the other half pit on the other, naturally it's going to mix things up. I thought that was pretty cool. Well, I was going to bring that up. Now you mentioned Oscar Piastri. The coolest part of the last two races has been McLaren just kind of jumping out of nowhere. Well, not really the last two races, because Silverstone had done it, but
confirming it
over the last two races. What do you guys think of that? I think it's pretty mega. And kind of, I look back at some of the stuff we've said earlier in the pod, they've proved a lot of people wrong, haven't they, in terms of being able to do that?
I think so. I think it shows that the regulations allow for big steps. We've seen Aston do it now. Over the winter, we see McLaren do it. Okay, this is what they wanted to do ahead of the season. They couldn't do it ahead of in time as well. But I think that it just shows that there is opportunity within the budget cap, sticking within the rules, to make those big steps. So it actually shows that some of the other teams who are struggling a little bit more, your Mercedes and Ferrari. But look, fair play to them. James Key left, obviously, earlier this year. I do personally think that a lot of what they've brought would have been down to him, so the amount of time that it will take for things to come through the system, you know, it's probably fair to say the new technical structure has probably allowed maybe the upgrade to come a little bit quicker. Maybe they got the most out of it, but fundamentally he would have had a hand in that as well. But yeah, I think it bodes well for McLaren going forward. I'm excited to have another team up in that sharp end as well, especially as Aston Martin is starting to fade. And we're finally going to get to see really what Lando has got when someone is really pushing him hard.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm going to debate something Lawrence just said.
Go for it.
And I like James Key as a guy, and I do still rate him, but I think that at McLaren he just did a good job, but I do not think there's any way they let him go or released him or fired him or however it actually played out if he played a significant role in that update. I think it's the fact that that opportunity had been missed and others felt that it was there and it was proven out to them that, yes, this has been missed by our technical director, or the structure in place hasn't allowed us to do it, is why he's then gone. Because surely, otherwise, they've shot themselves in the foot. They've made a great step forward, but they don't have the guy that helped them get there. So I don't know the detail on that. And I interviewed Zach about a week ago, and I'll admit he will probably spin it in a certain way.
Yeah,
he didn't say anything negative about James at all, but he was very complimentary about the people they have there now and their input and what they'd seen. And it wasn't that James didn't do that, but it was, I just can't see how they'd let him go in that case. You might restructure around him. You might want to almost, dare I say, demote him. Flip side, and again, I'm just arguing myself here because, you know, why not? He picked up a role again at Audi Alfa Romeo pretty quickly, alongside Seidel. And if that was because he actually had that lined up and had been approached by Andreas already, and then McLaren's restructure didn't suit him, but he still had brought a lot to the table, then he's like, well, I'm going to go and take that job. Then that could also make sense. But I just would be surprised if McLaren allowed him to go, essentially, or allowed themselves to lose him, if he had discovered this direction of upgrade. Because the thing with that seems to be, Mark Hughes wrote about this in Motorsport magazine, but it's genuinely, he thinks they're the first team that have actually followed what Red Bull have done. It's to do with the way the floor's designed, and that no other team, even Aston Martin don't have it, that no other team has worked it out. Aston Martin have done good things compared to what Mercedes and Ferrari have done and really nailed a concept that's slightly different. But to get towards the Red Bull direction, McLaren are the first ones to understand the secret, essentially, to Red Bull's success, which is higher tunnels under the car, like more pronounced tunnels under the car. And if that's true, then yeah, that's a major find and step forward that I just wouldn't think they'd allow him to go for. But I could be wrong, because, yeah, genuinely, this is all based on opinion. This isn't based on inside knowledge.
It just came around the time, though, where McLaren were really struggling, weren't they? I imagine Zach could have been under a lot of pressure from the board, from shareholders, because of the way that the form had kind of tipped away, and they'd obviously made that late decision to change the development direction and change what they were going to do. And I think at some point you do maybe need to make a change just to show you're trying to make a change. I'm not saying that James Key is fully 1,000% responsible for everything that they've delivered at the minute, but I fail to see how he can't have had some sort of role in kind of explaining what they're going to do. That said, I do feel like the technical structure they've got in place now makes a lot more sense. I think the people who are kind of working together now and everyone has clearer roles, I do think that going forward is a good thing. So maybe it's just a combination of things as well. But your point about the fact that they've cracked the way that Red Bull are getting the most out of the floor when everyone else hasn't managed to do it, whoever's managed to do that and whoever's contributed to that is very impressive.
Well, just to circle back to the fact that Nate asked a question about 5 minutes ago, yes, it is very exciting that McLaren have done this. But also, Lawrence, you just mentioned how Aston slid away, but then Alonso was fifth and pretty strong in Spa in the race. What I think is awesome is having those four teams in McLaren, Aston Martin, Ferrari and Mercedes, and you can't tell which one's going to be second any weekend, but you genuinely believe that each one of them has the potential to be. And yeah, maybe Aston were the one that you kind of thought didn't anymore until Spa, and then you're like, okay, they could still maybe get themselves in that fight. They're not dropping like a stone away from this fight. They're just not quite there. I think that's brilliant. I think that's genuinely what these whole rules are made to create. It's just the fact that Red Bull are up the road. If we could, sorry Red Bull and Red Bull fans, but if we could just remove them, be awesome.
Or just push them back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
but at the same time, you look at what Checo's done. I mean, we've talked about it before, but yeah. That's where you have to give Max the credit that people, some people probably won't want to, others feel like he doesn't get it enough. Like, it's the combination of him and that car and that team and the way it's all clicking is so formidable. But that's why it's Schumacher-esque and Hamilton-esque, and that's why it is on that level of the greats where someone becomes dominant, because everything works for them. And as you see from the teammate, who's proven he can win races, and at times we've hyped up because, you know, start this season with two wins from the first four, like, you go, actually, he could be very good, a proper challenger, is made to look average and is fighting with all the other teams. Like, if they had two drivers of Checo's level, they'd have a strong lineup still, but they would be in that fight behind.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's why... So these rules, you know, this cost cap that's come in, I think we're seeing it play out in a really cool way as well, because, like, the whole idea of you're only really as good as your last upgrade seems to be the thing at the moment. Every team that's brought a big upgrade has kind of made a step forward. I think that's, well, in terms of in that battle at the front anyway. And that's great, you know, because if we do get to a point where, like Mattis says, Red Bull get pulled back a little bit, I think we'll be in a great situation where it's just going to, every race, imagine that if every race we weren't sure who's going to be second, we weren't sure who's going to be the fastest car. That'd be like back to 2012 levels again, where you kind of come to every race like, well, this could be, like, Red Bull could be anywhere between first and third best here, you know, and suddenly, you know, moves around like that. So we feel close to it, but at the same time I feel like we're far off that, because Red Bull do seem, with Max in the car and with the car they have, that advantage seems pretty big. I can't see it coming down, especially now we're hearing all the teams saying we're just going to go to 2024. So it'll be really interesting to see the second half of the season we're coming up to, if that gap starts to come down for, like, Merck or for McLaren. I think it surely will at some point, but it's just how much that actually comes down. I don't know.
And it's also for next year as well, how much Red Bull has as development opportunity.
Yeah.
With the fact they've nailed these regulations, we're still early in them. But I'm sure they're going to improve their car again. That's the thing. Like, everyone's going to be trying to catch a benchmark that's further up the road from where they're right now.
It's like with Mercedes, right? When everyone was making gains under the V6 turbos, but the problem was the team making great gains as well was Mercedes. And so they would always turn up at races and were moving that goalpost forward. So, yeah, I think you're right about Red Bull. They don't get the credit they deserve. And I think they're going to keep winning at this kind of level, at least into next season. It's going to look like, oh, Formula 1's rules have ruined it. But it's like, well, one team's just... dominated them.
They've just done a better job.
Than everyone else, and it's so difficult to catch up in F1.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly as well, because the one thing that will get thrown back here, which understandably is the cost cap breach, and I mean the level of breach, like as we went through it with the actual numbers and the way it actually worked out, like they submit some things wrongly, but that weren't, you know, overspends or illegal. It was just wrong admin. But the overspend itself was, I think, $700,000, something like that. It was a low percentage, but it's still an overspend, so there's still a gain, but it's not the gain that's put them where they are. Like, they knew what they know now. They'd have had very similar, maybe they'd have brought a few fewer components to the track or something like that. But if I remember correctly, the other team, so there's Williams for reporting late, got penalised at the start of the year, but the other team that breached,
Aston Martin.
Now, their breach was very minimal and was, like, the way it was explained, got them off fairly lightly, but no one's turned around and gone, like, brilliant step forward from Aston Martin, but, you know, they cheated. Because it they're not frustrated at that. It's helping the sporting picture. So that's why I feel like...
Yeah, that's true.
It's almost levelled at Red Bull because they're annoyed already that Red Bull are dominating. And I get it. And also, like, they clearly did wrong. That's why they've been penalised in some way, shape or form. But even with that penalty, they've gone further forward.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. They'll be winning. I think they're the hot favourites for next year, but I actually think that other teams have a chance of properly, if they understand it. Like a Mercedes or Ferrari, if they get it right in the way that McLaren or Aston have over a winter, they will become Red Bull level. They won't get close, they will become that level. So you've got to hope that they do that. But yeah, I just kind of feel like there's a little bit that will continue to be thrown at them, but partly because of just the fact that they're dominating. If they weren't dominating, no one would be mentioning it anymore. If, say, Mercedes were dominating and Red Bull had done that, no one would be complaining. So it's there's a balance on that side of, like, how angry to be about it. But we've got to wait and see as well this year in case anything has come out of the way the cost cap's gone, because it's a complex issue and people will get that right and wrong. But that's all. That fun's all to come.
I'm not sure you describe it as fun.
No, it was Singapore last year, wasn't it? And it was stressful as anything.
Well, we're probably going to get it over the next two races, I would say. That's going to be the thing we're talking about, isn't it? I would imagine, because they want to get it done before that Asia leg, that this year's results come out. I mean,
they want to. Yeah.
They want to. Whether
but
they can.
Also wanted to finalise whether a new team could come in by the end of June and then by the end of July.
True.
And we're still waiting on that, but yeah, it gives us something to do over the summer.
That's true. Lawrence, F1, what's their official take, official stance on the budget cap? Are you allowed to say? Official stance on 11th team? Official stance. I want Stefano's.
You're gonna have to ask him.
No. But you're the. But I don't have him in front of me. Yeah. I do have Lawrence Barreto of F1.
You do, but I'm obviously not an official spokesperson.
Well, so. But that's with that attitude, you never will.
Fair. But yes, we're gonna stay to that party line. I'm not.
Oh,
an official
look at this. He's in marriage. He's still as good as ever. I like that. Hasn't. You haven't lost any focus. I like it.
Would you like to see a new team or two in Formula 1?
I would. But I think they've got to be a team that's... I don't want a team that just folds after 3 years, because I think that just looks really, really silly. But yeah, I think there's... If you look at it from a sporting point of view, you've got two more drivers in, a bunch more sponsors in, just a new team for people to root for. You've got that kind of new feeling to it. You know, if it wasn't Andretti, for example, I think that'd be great for the US. You know, get that team name in. I don't know how big it is to a non-racing fan, if I'm honest with you, the Andretti name. I know that that's played up a lot by petrol heads. I don't think your average Joe in America gives a damn if it's Andretti or if it's Bob or if it's Team Craig, you know, whoever the, like, just give it any name.
Did they enter?
Yeah, well, Team Bob, they're a left field. It's Mr. Bob of America as well. Great racing family. But my point being that the name, I don't think the name for a younger demographic really matters. I think what's great about the new team coming in is just having a competitive 11th team there. You know, it brings with it a lot of new opportunities as well. Like, it means, you know, maybe new engine manufacturers come in, you know, all this stuff. So I think it'd be great. Whether it will happen, I doubt it, because I think F1 wants to protect itself and they want to protect its teams, which I kind of get their point of view. Well, I do get their point of view as well, but I think it'd be quite short-sighted if a team got blocked. I think the more likely thing we'll see is one of those teams buying an existing team to come in. That's just my guess. I'm not, like with what Meda said earlier about James Key, not based on the insider knowledge, but just where things seem to be headed. I don't know if we'll get it, but it'd be great. And I guess as well, a new team comes in. It's a whole. Does Drive to Survive become 11 part? Is it 10 part? What happens?
Isn't it 8 part?
Is it 8 part? Oh, damn!
Yeah, I think they changed that.
Does it become? Sorry, does mate. It stay 8 part, or does
I
it?
I think
go
it stays 8 part. Yeah.
8 point.
And 8 point.
Have to fight
9 part, maybe.
Fight even harder for some time.
Does Mercedes just drop out again? Ferrari.
And Ferrari.
Say, yeah, Ferrari and Mercedes. So no, we'll give our slot up to. It's a team, Bob.
I was just quick aside. I was talking to someone involved with the F1 film. And they were kind of saying about how they some drivers have really bought into it, but really get like Carlos Sainz in Silverstone,
really
like made sure
it,
he was
yeah.
in shot. It turns out, I think Lewis, there's photos circulating. We weren't really meant to promote these, but photos circulating of Parc Fermé. There's a shot being seen in Parc Fermé in Hungary, and I think the frame that everyone got was Lewis congratulating Damson Idris's character, celebrating something, but you don't know what he's celebrating. Because what they've publicly said is it's a back of the grid team, so you don't I genuinely don't know what he's celebrating. But he's celebrating Parc Fermé, and Lewis congratulates him. Not scripted, not planned, not told to do it. And I know Lewis is involved, but that was just him being like, I would do that in a race to someone who's celebrating. You know, like Max has won a race, and you're walking past, you don't blank them, you go well done, like and carry on. So they were saying some drivers are like that, and it's been really good to see them connect, and others haven't been because they're a bit like, well, it's a bit weird or it's Hollywood. But they mentioned Drive to Survive, and you look at the fact that Mercedes and Ferrari didn't commit to it in the first year. They were like, "Nope, we don't have the time. It's not worth our, you know, we're too important. We're focusing on winning races, whatever." The most committed team was Red Bull. It didn't hurt their chances moving forward, did it? And the second year, everyone was suddenly like, "You need to get involved. This is going to grow our sport and take it to a new audience." And it doesn't hurt the existing audience. I get that not every F1 fan's a fan of Drive to Survive, but if it takes it to a new one and strengthens the sport as a whole, that's great for everyone.
Yeah.
So, good. Yeah, I thought that was funny about the film. But on the new team, I wanted to answer your question, Lawrence. I don't care how long we're running. We're going to have the longest episode ever.
Lawrence is very, he's looking at the clock.
Just like, keep an eye on it.
More,
yeah.
More
no,
beers,
things.
Please.
So, we're trying to keep control of this pod.
You're doing a great job.
Good luck. So with the new teams, I'd love to see new teams, genuinely. Look, Haas are great for us to connect with now anyway, but I find new teams like a really fascinating aspect of F1 whenever one can come in. If you think of the Manor Caterham HRT spell, that was a point where they wanted them to come in because F1 was struggling. Like, there was a lot of teams really struggling, and the way they viewed it then was other teams could go under. We could end up with not enough teams. We need more coming in if people are ready to do it. That two of them maybe all three of them, are joined on the premise of a cost cap as well. It's the only way they could afford it. Funnily enough, that didn't happen. Funnily enough, they didn't survive. I don't worry about anyone going under now coming
in. Yeah, I think
with the cost caps and the way F1 is, yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone's going to be okay who comes in. I think any of the ones that have applied could. I only think Andretti really do bring a lot to the table. Like, High Tech sound like they've advanced a lot, that they've got a good racing setup, that they might have developed quite a good car so far that's been in the wind tunnel. But I, as far as I'm aware, they don't have any other backer, as in like a car manufacturer or something. So it is just a racing team being added. Now, that's not a problem. Great. If they can come in and it makes sense, fine. Like, it'd be awesome to see a new team take it to other teams. But then when you go, but what, you know, you look at the Andretti option, and okay, America, great, but just General Motors getting involved. And people think of General Motors as a power unit. Like, even Zach said this on the interview I did with him the other day. It was like, you know, oh, if they're coming in as a power unit supplier, then maybe, yeah, it's additive. But General Motors have their own racing program with like Cadillac and stuff. They don't just make power units, they make racing cars. They're a whole racing entity. So if they're partnering, that's more than just, you know, if they don't supply a power unit, but they might build half the chassis or something. Like, yeah, some of their design ideas and things like that. So I think getting a company that massive within global motoring is a really good thing for F1. Because not only that, say Andretti struggle, but GM like it. They like what they're getting from it. They like the exposure they're getting. They see that they could do better with another partner, whatever it may be. No offense to Andretti, but imagine that scenario. Then they might end up partnering with an existing team or another team. And again, that's strength in the sport. So
yeah,
I'd see there's a lot going for that Andretti bid, as far as I'm aware. And they've hired some smart people as well. But I just think it's fascinating. Like the film, Silverstone, we were all staring at Apex GP and looking in their garage and paying attention to what's going on. And that was a fictional length team. But Racer won't mind me saying this. That was one of our top 10 stories of the month. Was just the fact that they were there doing the story on the Thursday.
Yeah, it did well on ESPN as well.
Yeah,
same thing.
Like, people are new, excites people. Now you get new and potentially competitive and well backed, well resourced, well planned. I don't see how that hurts. And if we're not going to expand now, when are we? Because we're not going to get to the point that 10 teams are all about to collapse with the way F1's now structured. They've learned, like, COVID helped, but cost cap and stuff. Everyone has a good business model that they'll survive at the very least. And I don't like the idea of then trying to make every team as profitable as possible in terms of where you could sell for a load of money if you don't let anyone else in. That is anti-competitive to me.
Yeah.
And I look at like the NFL or any of the American sports that are franchise-based, which F1 now has become, let's be honest. You need to expand to create an even better product and to stop it seeming like it's just a money grab. So I'm absolutely all for a new team.
And you can change the power balance as well in terms of like the politics. I mean, I'm not saying like a new team's going to come in and immediately have the same sway that like a Christian Horner or Toto Wolff does. But you bring someone like that into the mix, and like you say, with all that backing, suddenly those discussions are very different because you've got a team coming in with a completely new new view of stuff and says, well, actually, we don't buy into this kind of unwritten rule of how you do things in Formula One. We actually think this is better for Formula One. And the NFL thing, we spoke to James Vowles, didn't we, at Spa, and he mentioned about that. He said in the NFL, if F1 moves more towards that model, you know, you've basically got 32 teams who are they're trying to help each other because they understand that if all the teams are doing well, the league does better. And I think we're slowly moving towards that. I think it'll take time, but bringing 11 team in, I think, just shows like we're actually viewing this bigger than just we're 10 teams and it's just us. It's all about the sport itself. So I agree with you. I think it would be mega. It's just, I think that they have to select the right team. I think Andretti is the right. I think Andretti would be the right option. Yeah.
From what we know, I think it would be interesting to see any of the teams come in that have kind of applied. There's a few that really have very little known about them and very little business planning that was made public, which doesn't mean it's not there, but it's hard to then back them because of that. But Andretti they've outlined enough previously, but at the same time they've gone quiet recently because they were told to. F1 said stop talking publicly.
Michael Andretti kind of spoke too much at the start of the year, didn't he? He was like,
and I slagged him off for it. I remember writing a piece on racing, being like, just shut up, like as in the nicest possible way. If you want a chance, and I wanted them to have a chance, I'm like, you're hurting yourself by doing this.
So you don't slag off the people that you're trying to get into bed with.
Yeah.
You don't say these guys are all greedy. It's like, well, they're not going to take that very lightly. So.
Got a topic that we haven't touched on yet.
Alpine.
It's
been quite a few weeks, I'd say, maybe even a few months for Alpine. Obviously, they had that investment from Ryan Reynolds. It was all looking quite rosy. Then Laurent Rossi got moved aside, their CEO. Then we got to Spa and Otmar Szafnauer, Alain Permain, team principal and sporting director, left the team mid-weekend but completed the race weekend. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Very odd.
Maybe like Laurent Necky's a little bit at Ferrari, was told he's going to have AlphaTauri, continued in the role as point director, but that happened. And obviously Pat Fry left as well, but he went to another job, to Williams, as their chief technical officer. I don't think I've covered Formula One and seen that much change in one team in one go.
No.
And I was looking back in history, and I don't think I've seen that much in the senior positions that
much. 4 years they've made, there must be about 8 or 9 changes that have been made at those kind of levels.
Yeah, and that's what's important, actually. Because so the Pat Fry move was one that I remember asking James Vowles about it. I was like, are you pissed off? Because Williams had told us in the morning it was coming, or something was coming, you know, at this time we're going to have an announcement. That's why you're speaking to James afterwards. Then it was like, we can let you have it under embargo. And I think motorsport.com or someone like did get something on it ahead of time, which annoyingly we then are not allowed to touch because we've been told it officially under embargo. So you can't then be like, oh, it's out there, so we're going with it. But the Fry move started in April, or was agreed in April. Alpine knew in April. So that was Fry going, this place is on fire, I want out right now. Having apparently, when Val said he first approached him in February, been like, no, I'm really happy where I am, I don't want to move. So that showed kind of the deterioration over that period. That also tallies, and Val's said this again, didn't he, that you can look at the time roughly where he probably made that decision, which was the Miami weekend when Lauren Rossi had a real go at management and things started to get publicly dirty. From then, we probably should have seen this coming, certainly with Safnauer, but, well, we did see it coming, and he wasn't happy about it, and other people weren't happy about it, but it was clear at that point. What almost saved him, I think, was Rossi going, or would have given an opportunity to, and that's why I actually feel like it's been unfair. Then some other people have come in, and they're tasked with, all right, we'll turn this around quicker because McLaren have done it and Aston have done it. So then they go to Safnauer and Permain and co and go, you've got to be like making huge steps within the next 12 months or whatever it is. And they've gone, that just doesn't happen. Mm. Yes, they might have done it, but we can't guarantee you that. This is a timeline we need. We want to hire people, blah, blah, blah. And Renault have gone, no. Like, if that doesn't tally with what we want. So I in a weird way, having... It was the writing was on the wall from Miami, and... I don't mind admitting that I was heavily criticised by people within Alpine for saying, like, how do you hold on to your job when Rossi's coming out and, like, you know, machine gunning the place at that stage? People are going to lose their jobs because of it. And then it happens, but by the time it happened, you're actually like, well, come on, you've got to this point, you've waited this long, and you've had a change of CEO. Like, yeah. Put a plan in place. They clearly don't have one, do they? They haven't announced anything since.
Also, everything you wrote has proven to be true as well. You
know, but that's what I mean. It's like there's not real satisfaction in that because it's not like they've then gone, oh, this is what we were planning to do.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't actually feel it's that directly connected, what's happened now with what happened then, because Rossi left.
Well, from what I understand, that definitely rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I think it took any positive momentum that was going and just turned it the other way. But what I was going to bring up was, I've never, you mentioned I've... In terms of working in Formula One, you've never seen that much change. I can't remember many times I've read an article as explosive as Alan Prost's in L'Équipe that followed that.
He was ruthless, wasn't he?
And what was it? What was the personality trait that he gave Laurent Rossi? What was the name of it? I was about to say it's the Freddy Krueger effect, but it's not. It's something. Denning. Tyler Denning.
No, Krueger's in
it. Tyler Denning. No, Tyler Denning works for ESPN. Something Denning. Something.
Or Dunning.
Dunning. Tyler Denning's a guy that. I've worked with at ESPN before. It's definitely not Tyler Denning.
Talk about yourself. I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, do it. But anyway, but my point being is that Prost is somebody who was like intimately involved in that project, and the article. I mean, I urge anyone listening to go read it in full because the quotes are just unbelievable. You know, it's basically aimed at Lauren Rossi. He says, you know, he undid all the good momentum we had, said the guy was incompetent, all these different things. So it shows you that even outside of the team, there are people who are deeply upset with how it's going. So I think that whole team's in a real mess at the moment. And whether or not this change gets rid of that, because I think sometimes culturally you just need to nuke everything and just start again. And I mean, I don't know anything about Bruno Firmin, who's come in and is now kind of in that position. But I mean, it's difficult to be convinced that they've moved on from those problems just with another reshuffle. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's the case.
So I've not quite got to it, but in my head I've got Dunning-Kruger effect.
I think it's Dunning-Kruger.
And I'm just double checking.
Dunning-Kruger effect. Which means that, and the definition he gives, which is slightly off, but it's actually the definition Prost gives of Dunning-Kruger is somebody who's so incompetent that they make up for that with confidence in their abilities. And he said that's what Lauren Rossi had. And I've never seen somebody so publicly eviscerated in Formula One. And whether it's true or not, who knows? Well, obviously, Alan Prost knows that team, and his words carry quite a lot of weight. And it gives you an insight, given the fact that he left the team when Rossi came in, kind of hints at what was going on behind the scenes there, which I think is remarkable.
But I also think, playing devil's advocate, I think when you've been let go...
Oh, yeah, from, yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, from a position that...
There's some bitterness there, definitely.
Yeah, and yeah. I think, especially the tone, I think you can probably... You can kind of assess the situation and factually say where things are going wrong, but there was an element of bitterness that I think that came through.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of, and we haven't heard from Rossi yet, so he might give a very different opinion. And
I think so.
You can never just trust one thing, but I just think it was fascinating that's the insight we get into it is that article, because you're right, the bitterness there. Prost obviously was let go for a reason. You know, he must have done something, or there must have been something that people felt he wasn't a good fit for at the time. So, but yeah, it was, you could imagine him almost saying it and just spitting as he said it, you know, spitting and covering the lens with saliva, you know, just like, and Alan Prost never usually like that, is he? He's quite a soft-spoken kind of guy.
So,
Sorry to zone out. these two know, but nobody listening knows. Today started badly for me, where I'm meant to move house in 5 days, and there'd been an admin error in some way, shape or form with our mortgage, and I was essentially going to be out £20,000, which I couldn't afford, and also 50% per month on the mortgage rate. There'd been some admin errors. Anyway, I was scrabbling to try and fix it. It was on other people to fix. It was a mortgage provider's problem, all that. This is really boring for people, I know, but there was a chance it was going to actually mean either the sale fell through or that it got delayed. But I've just had an email that suggests we're good, which is why I said it was on my phone, being like, okay, they seem to have rectified it. So I'm a very happy man right now.
Get in.
And seeing as we've had a few drinks, sat here at Topgolf, and a lovely time, and also the first Paddock on three separate mics in person, we think. We did do it. We did it in McLaren.
Oh yeah,
on three
separate
mics.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, okay. But this is.
Way to be a buzzkill.
The second Paddock on three separate mics altogether. I'm going to suggest we have a celebratory drink at the end of this.
I think so. And we should definitely end on that very positive note.
We should indeed. Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry to Lauren Rossi and Alpine.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about that. Yeah, but yes. Chaps,
Rossi's been a lossy to Formula One.
Oh, God. That was terrible. But I need to end it now before any more terrible jokes come out. Nate found that hilarious.
Nate liked that.
I like that a lot. That was great.
That may be the most you've loved for this whole podcast.
How long have we talking for?
How long have we spoken for? This is the drunkest
for?
We've sounded on this.
Yeah. 47 minutes.
Sorry, everyone.
Okay. Sorry, but I've enjoyed this chat. I've enjoyed seeing you guys as ever.
It's a summer break. We've not done one for a month. We were due a long one.
Yeah, I think so.
What's he laughing at?
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Right. We'll see. I'm going to call it there. Funny? Chaps, no, stop. Well, we're calling it here, okay?
Oh, I'm at a lossy for words.
That was very good.
Wait, hey,
it's the same as what he said. It's the same as what he said.
No, because you repeated it, not because it was a different joke. Oh.
Wow, some favouritism coming out here.
If anyone was in any doubt, and I'm sure you weren't, as to why our rating system is flawed, you've just seen a prime example.
Right, I apologise to everyone listening, to my two friends sat opposite me at this bench.
At this point, actually, I just want to add that we love everyone who's listening. The fact that you've stuck with it, that it's been a month since we've given you anything, and we're so intermittent with these podcasts.
Yeah.
But it's fun to just shoot the shit with our mates and let people hear it when we can. So we'll try and do it when we can.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's going to get busy when we go back. Are we both at both races, Zandvoort and Monza?
Indeed.
Yes.
Cool.
We can probably do one in Zandvoort, can't we? Like we did on the beach last.
Yeah, we'll do that again. We'll do you another beach techno episode. Look forward to that.
Oh yeah, that was good last year. Enjoyed that.
Wicked. All right. Well, thanks very much to anyone who is still listening. You can follow us at the Paddock on our social channels. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Meda's work on Race.com, and my work on F1.com. Nate has saluted me because I managed to finally close this podcast. We'll do this again very, very soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.